Please tell me your full name and where we are right now.
Russell W. Elmer. I was born January 19, 1921, right down here on the riverbank. When I was ready to be born, I called for Dr. Gilmore. He lived just north of that edge of Union.
Was it your grandparents or your great-grandparents who came first to Union County?
It was my grandmother and grandfather that came to Oregon first.
From where?
From Kansas and Oklahoma. Mm-hmm.
Did either of them or both of them tell you what made them decide to come here?
Well, they started out in Oklahoma. My grandmother said that the grasshoppers come one year and eat everything but the broom handle. And so when they came here, they homesteaded north of Elgin. Granddad...
Well, why did they choose here?
I don't really know why they came here.
Do you think they might have read in newspapers what the opportunities were in eastern Oregon?
No, I really don't know what attracted them here, whether there was any of the earlier family here.
Norma Jean, your parents, or was it your great-grandparents came to Elgin?
Yes, my grandparents came to Elgin. Mm-hmm.
Do you know why they came there?
Yes, they heard that there was good land and that they could raise good crops there. They had relatives who had come first and settled around Somerville and had very good soil. And
would they have heard then by letters? There wasn't a telephone.
Yeah, it would be by letters.
And probably not much visiting back and forth.
Well, sometimes... Sometimes they'd travel with the wagons and teams, and of course those who came first would send back word to the others, and they would.
Did you ever find among your grandparents' things any of those letters?
We have a book called 100 Years of Hugs by Bernal Hugg in Elgin.
Yes, I've seen that.
That has my relatives in it too, because my father was. My grandfather married a hug.
His name was Roulette?
Yes.
R-O-U-L-E-T-T-E?
Well, it was to begin with, and then they dropped the T-E and just said Roulette. And actually, first of all, it was Roulet.
Roulet, of course.
From France. Mm-hmm. Switzerland, actually, is where they lived.
So, the letter or letters in the hug book are the only ones you know about?
Mostly, I have had a few letters that my sister, my grandfather wrote to some of his relatives.
Do you think that might be how Russell's grandparents learned about it?
I don't know if they communicated with anyone here.
It seemed like Granddad came to California first. Before grandmother, and of course the railroad was in operation then, so they could travel better. They didn't come with the wagon trains. The
railroad came through here in 1884, so they came after that?
Yeah, probably about that time, because they homesteaded in the 80s out of Elgin, so they came just pretty soon after the railroad time.
And was all of the land that was available in Union County at that time under the Homestead Act?
I'm not sure.
Because the Homestead Act was earlier, about 1860, 61.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how long it was in effect, but my understanding is that land in the main part of the valley here was snapped up fairly fast.
I'm sure it was, like Conley's, Miller's, and Gray's.
Is it possible then that your grandparents got some of the last land that was available by the Homestead Act?
It probably was near the last. because it was out north of Elgin, you know. I suspect all this main valley had been taken up.
Yeah. How much did they get? 160 acres?
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear them talk about how good the land was or what troubles they might have had?
Well, it was just timber land. There wasn't, I think they had a little hay.
Nothing was arable then at all?
Hay ground, little hay ground. But, it was mostly timber.
Did they have to clear that and plow in order to...
Not much. He worked for the railroad. He was section foreman at the railroad when they built the railroad on up to the branch.
I see.
Worked Chinese and Jap laborers then. And he put a steam engine on the hand car. My cousin has that steam engine and the boiler that he had on the hand car.
Did your grandfather previously have experience with railroading?
Not that I know of.
He just picked it up?
Yeah.
As needed?
Always an inventor.
What stories of... You knew your grandparents, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
And were they of sound mind when you knew them, so they could remember pretty well?
Oh, yes.
Well, do you remember some stories they told about the early days here?
Well, there's... When he left the railroad, he bought a little ranch in High Valley. And started farming.
Was that when the branch line was completed?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was along about 1908 or 10 when they came here, bought this section here. And then, you see, there was two boys, my father and Howard's dad. My dad went to the war, and so when he came back from the war, they were all farming together here.
But you don't remember stories your grandparents told?
Well, how about the one about the Indians out at Elgin when they were living there?
Yeah, there were still some Indian families living down north.
Cricket Flat?
And
would it have been?
Well, now it's down towards Looking Glass.
Yeah.
This one would come and go to town with grandfather at different times. But he came riding in one day.
Town being Elgin or LeGrand?
Elgin.
Out of Elgin.
Mm-hmm.
Granddad always had a blacksmith shop and a forge, and he was always making things. Well, anyway, this Indian come riding in. His horse had fallen with him and bent his gun barrel. And so he handed it to Granddad, and he said, "Can you fix him?" And Granddad said, "Well, I can straighten it, but I don't know how accurate it will be." So he laid it across two blocks, and he took another block and a heavy hammer, and he'd hit it, and then he'd raise it up in sight. I think he said he hit it three times, and he handed it back to the Indian, and he said, you'll have to try it and see how accurate. A day or two later, he come riding back in, handed it back to Granddad, and he said, "Hit him again." He went to town one day, went into the butcher shop, and there was a lady buying some meat, and they'd just come out with these slicers. You had to turn it by hand and make a slice.
Mm-hmm.
And he was looking over her shoulder. He was intrigued with that slicer. And he sliced through a little thin piece. Damn near missed it. He thought there should have been a thicker slice. Not through that slicer.
Slice of what?
Meat.
What did that have to do with the shotgun?
Well, that was a different story from the
shotgun. Oh, I see. You lost me there for a moment.
He
said hit her again, and but, that was the end of that story, huh?
Yeah.
What, did it shoot better after that, did he say?
That was the end of the story.
That happened out at the place. The meat deal happened in town.
Yeah. So you don't remember stories they told about the trying to raise hay, or what they did with the timber, or how they lived?
The granddad always had a sawmill. and a thrashing machine, a steam engine. And when I lived in High Valley, he did thrashing for other people. In fact, he had two steam engines and thrashing machines. And when he left there, he sold one to the Alexanders and brought the other one here. But, no, I don't remember. I was 21 when he died. He died in 41. And grandmother lived another 12, 15 years. She was in her 90s. Late 80s, I think. But Granddad's birthday was the 29th of February, and grandmother's birthday was the first day of March. So he just had a birthday every fourth year. But no, I don't. They weren't big storytellers. And
you didn't push them.
No.
Did they ever write any of their memories?
Yeah, their granddad kept a ledger. But I don't know where. I don't know. Probably Harvey. Howard may have it.
A ledger would be mainly numbers, wouldn't it? Not like a diary.
Well, he would. No, I think he'd note things, some important happenings, things that happened.
Russell's dad kept a ledger, and he would say, maybe sold hay for how much today,
yes.
Or then he'd say, well, we rounded up the cattle, and
yeah.
Things that they did daily. He'd usually put a little notation of what they did.
I've read Bernal Hugg Sr.'s ledgers of his farming experiences, very, very detailed. Of course, he was also always experimenting with new ways of raising crops or new kinds of trees to grow,
mm-hmm.
And he kept detailed records of all of those.
Yeah, Bernal, he was pretty exact with everything.
He was a remarkable man.
Yeah.
Did your grandparents know him?
I suppose they did. I suspect they did. But back then, you know, that travel way, they had a. It's 1917 to 1928. I've got the license plates from the Model T Ford. Of course, the roads weren't graveled. It was muddy. And in the wintertime, we'd go with a team in the hack, a team in the buggy. Roads weren't fit to travel. And Ford, they called it their Ford 6. Three tires and three cylinders.
Yeah, remember you said that.
Yeah.
Did you ever get from your grandparents any sense of whether they had regrets about coming here?
No, I never heard anything about them looking back.
Did they make comparisons with how it had been in Oklahoma?
Well, only what I told you about grandmother, and they all had storm cellars. For tornadoes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm sure they were happy to be here and have this good land and be able to farm and do it the way.
She said she and her sister would go out and gather cow chips to burn in the cook stove. So they burned good.
In Oklahoma or here?
Oklahoma.
Yeah. They didn't have many trees.
No.
And in Kansas, didn't they have Indian raids and things like that?
They had Indian scares, and there was a fort they'd go to. And they got word that the Indians may be coming, and so they packed up and went to the fort for two or three days. Her mother had some flat irons, and that was really something in those days to have flat irons to iron. Well, she run with her flat irons out to the garden and hid them under the cabbage leaves. When they came back home, the pigs had got out and eat the cabbage, and the irons was laying out there. I don't know why an Indian would have wanted to know what to do with a flat iron. But see, that was one of her prized possessions.
It sounds as though you're saying that when they were in Oklahoma, they had a fear or maybe a hostility toward the Indians.
Well, they had been problems with the Indians.
But in Union County, north of Elgin, they lived.
Oh, they were all friendly
ways.
Yes, no problem. Yeah.
Do you remember your grandparents talking about any of their relationships with Indians?
Nothing more than what I've already been reminded of. Yeah.
But that almost suggests that maybe the Indians didn't have much to do with the whites unless they had some kind of a need, like straightening out a shotgun.
Yeah, I don't think there was a lot of interaction.
No socializing? No having dinner together?
Not much. The Indians, they kind of lived their style. Mm-hmm. We're still primitive.
Yeah. Well, primitive in the sense that they had lived the way Indians had lived for hundreds, probably thousands of years.
Yeah.
Which didn't mean having a refrigerator and a indoor toilet or anything like that.
No, I remember when we were in cattle in the Minum. We had a cabin, nice cabin and barn in the little Minum. And in the fall, the summer, late summer, while we'd go in, Dad and Mother, and stay at the cabin, we always hired a rider to stay there and take salt out. But we'd go in and down below the cabin on the creek, the Indians would come in, some Indians from Pendleton, and they'd be the old gentleman riding ahead and have his rifle across the saddle, and they'd be two or three young fellas behind, and then the squaws would be coming behind a leading horse with the squaw cart and their tents and stuff on the poles, dragging the poles. Would come in and they'd camp down below the cabin on the river.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of an annual thing for them. And then they'd dig roots and stuff.
You remember your grandparents ever showing in any way that they understood the treaties with Indians?
No, I don't remember any that they ever mentioned that. That pretty much, most of that happened earlier.
1851, I think, was the last treaty.
Yes.
And that one was supposed to have kept all whites out of Eastern Oregon. It was to be entirely for the Indians.
Oh, I never heard that.
That idea didn't last long, of course.
Yeah.
It was quickly overruled by people who saw too much value in Eastern Oregon to leave just to the Indians.
I guess the Indians really didn't winter much here in the valley.
Right.
I think they mostly went
stopping place.
Yes, yeah. The summer activity.
Like the spring and fall, I think, mainly.
Yeah.
Okay, well, have we got everything you can remember about what your parents said early life was in Union County?
You might tell about your parents' honeymoon.
Honeymoon?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Where were they married, in Elgin?
Well, I don't remember where they were married, but after the war, they got married. They went on their honeymoon, packed into the Minum, to their honeymoon, camped in the Minum, mm-hmm. below the horse ranch, mm-hmm. down the old Tapir homestead.
Riding horses to the Minum and camping out. Mm-hmm. That was fun for them.
Yeah.
That was a nice way to celebrate.
I think you said that your father decided that, or was it your grandfather who decided to buy land in this part of the valley?
Yeah, granddad.
Here. And so your father was born in this part of the valley rather than near Elgin or Looking Glass?
Who was Dad born? you have the record. I can't remember now whether he was born in. I think they lived out of Embler a little while.
Well, at any rate, they lived here long enough to get you born here, right? For me, memories, fairly distinct memories of things in my early childhood start, I guess, around age 5 or 6. Is that about right for you?
Probably.
Okay. So, what can you remember about the place that was called home when you were 5 or 6 years old? What kind of a building was it?
This, the original house here that was here when my grandparents came here, it belonged to the Schofield family. And I remember we had tough winters, cold, 30 below zero back then. And my dad would get up in the morning and build a fire in the cook stove to warm the ironing irons on the stove so he could melt the frost away from the door, because there wasn't double windows or anything. He had to melt the frost away from the door to get the door open.
Was this a one-room house?
Oh, no, there were two bedrooms, and there was a cellar underneath the back of the kitchen. There was a storage and pantry room, and then the cellar underneath where the root cellar, you know.
Had your father built the house?
No, the house was original here.
He bought it from the Schofields, perhaps?
Yes.
Yeah.
Grandfather did.
Do you remember wind whistling through the boards and the walls, or window around the windows and through the under the door? Was it that kind of construction? Pretty rickety.
Well, it wasn't tight like they are nowadays. Of course, we had a good stove to heat in the living room, a stove, and then of course the cook stove in the kitchen that hit that part of the house. But the bedrooms, there wasn't any heat.
Did you stuff newspaper in the cracks?
Well,
I expect
they did underneath the doors.
Was the house painted on the inside or the outside?
I can't remember.
What kind of furniture did it have in it?
Well, pretty rustic.
Handmade, do you think?
Yes.
Can you describe the bed you slept in?
No, I don't remember just how it was, but I know it had a frame, so it was up off the floor.
Maybe two pieces of lumber on one side and some 2x2s for posts?
Yeah.
Something simple like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the house that they moved when your grandma...
No, that was another house. The house down there was moved out to the sawmill shed.
Okay.
I don't remember that house. I don't remember. Maybe that was part of the house.
The house that Harvey moved over
there
for Grandma?
Yeah.
Tell me more about the routine in that house.
My dad always whittled shavings, and the night before he went to bed, he'd whittle shavings to start the fire in the cook stove.
Pitch? Was it pitch?
Well, if he had pitch, he would. He wanted something that was soft so he could whittle. And we had kerosene lanterns that we'd go to. And my job was helping milk the cows. And my dad and my brother, they took care of the horse barn part of it, and I and my uncle did the milking, separating the cream and feeding the pigs. And then, of course, I rode a horse back to school 3 miles across the field.
Before you get to that, one of the first things you had to do after you got up was milk the cows, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, well, tell me about your clothes. Pair of pants and a wool shirt?
Well, some clothes, like some jackets. My mother was quite She and my grandmother, they liked to sew. They always had the sewing machine, the old treadle machine, you know, and they did quite a bit of sewing, but most of our clothes were store-bought. And of course, they'd darn the socks, you know, make the socks.
It wasn't jeans, then, was it, for pants?
Yeah, they were bought. I don't remember if they were built, that they ever
bought. Like these?
Homemade jeans, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Homemade?
No, I don't think they did.
I don't remember if they were homemade. They were all store-bought.
Did you have a belt?
No, I don't think I wore a belt much when I was...
Suspenders?
I guess I did wear a belt. No, I never did wear suspenders when I was young.
A flannel shirt?
Yeah, just flannel shirts.
I think Grandma made a lot of their shirts, mm-hmm. the flannel shirts.
What kind of socks?
Well, they were homespun, some of them. But of course, they were store-bought, too.
Okay. And shoes?
Yeah, they were store-bought.
Did you wear boots most of the time for farm work?
Well, mostly we wore lace shoes. I remember my grandfather had a shoe stand with a thorn so he could repair, and he had a hammer and the nails that he could repair the soles.
Oh, the kind of shoe stand that has the outline of a foot upside down so you could put the shoe onto it to work on it?
Yeah, it was a metal thing. You flip the shoe over.
You saw those at old shoemaker shops too, didn't you? Yeah.
Yes.
So when the soles got worn out, he put new ones on that way?
Yes.
Did he have pieces of leather around that he could just cut out the sole?
Oh, I always had leather. My dad always repaired the harness. And we had a harness shop out from the barn. In the wintertime, he fixed a barrel with a grate in the bottom and a lid that he could fasten tight and a little oil burner to warm that oil. And he put the harness in there and then it fixed so it could turn and it would tumble with the oil and harness.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd buy a hide of leather to repair.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the sewing thing. You'd sit on and had the jaws that come up to held the leather. And you'd push down and clamp the leather in there, and then he had it all. He'd punch through to repair a tug. He'd punch the oil. Well, he had a little rowel run through that marked the stitches.
Rowel, did you say?
Yeah, a little spur rowel that would mark the stitches. And just this,
I've heard that called an awl.
And he had an awl that would stick through. And then he had linen thread with beeswax, and you'd have a needle on each end, and he'd stick through the hole, put one needle through this way and another in this way, punch another hole, sew a tug.
Mm-hmm.
Repair harness that way.
Mm-hmm. And same with shoes? I mean, a similar process for shoes?
I suppose, probably.
Yeah. Did you usually have one pair of pants and one shirt and one set of underwear? What, was it long john underwear, usually?
Oh, I mean, I think we usually had a change. Yeah, we had an extra pair.
You mean two sets to last you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How often did they get washed?
Yeah, it just depended on how much dirt we got into.
Well, was it up to you to decide, Mom, these need to be washed?
Well, if it wasn't comfortable, I was wanting something better.
Did she look you over and say, you're not supposed to, you shouldn't wear those dirty clothes anymore, I need to wash them?
Probably did. Yeah.
Did you usually wear a hat, a straw hat maybe?
In the summer, a straw hat. In the winter, we'd wear a cap, you know, that we could pull down over our ears.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe a wool cap that cover your whole head snugly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had cold winters and lots of snow.
Yeah, I know.
I remember his mother telling about when she put the children to bed for an afternoon nap, she had the two boys and a little girl, The girl was rather mischievous, and when the boys would get to sleep, why, she'd sneak around and put, one time she put mercuric chrome on their faces, painted them up, and just little things like that. But she said before she put her to bed, she took her clothes and washed them and dried them on the line while she was sleeping. So in the summer, her clothes would be ready to put on when she got up. And so they didn't have too many clothes, I don't think, but you know, kept them washed up.
Yeah. And I suppose washing was in a big tub with soap that your mother might have made.
Lye soap.
Lye.
Yeah, lye soap.
They had a little copper tub. Not so wide and so long.
And a metal washboard.
So high, yeah, washboard.
Yeah. And then you boil them, too. Mm-hmm. Boil them on the stove.
How about haircuts? How often did you get a haircut?
Yeah, my mother always cut our hair.
How often?
Hand clippers.
Oh boy, I can feel the pinching now.
Yeah, sometimes.
Once a month, maybe?
Yeah.
So, if you got dressed in the morning, didn't have time for breakfast before you went out to milk the cows?
Well, we'd go out and do chores before breakfast.
Yes. And did you get anything to drink or nibble on? Just hold it, not eating or drinking anything until you got in for breakfast?
No, we didn't do much snacking. It was pretty, I always had biscuits. Yeah, there was always biscuits and gravy and they'd make jerky and they'd hang it on strings behind the stove on the rod by the warming oven. And they'd chip that jerky in the gravy for breakfast. And of course we always had oatmeal or... My granddad had a little grinding machine that he ground wheat and made or cereal, and it screened out the fines for flour, and then the little larger stuff it used for cereal.
Mm-hmm.
So that pretty much was our breakfast menu.
There's one other little aspect of the, but a fairly important one, part of the morning routine. Did you have a chamber pot under your bed upstairs, or did you run out in the cold to the privy first thing?
Yeah, I think everybody had the pot. Yeah, that was pretty standard. And of course,
better than running out in the middle of the night, certainly.
The house was out, yeah.
Yeah. Well, whose responsibility was it to take care of the contents of the chamber pot then?
Mother always.
Mother had to do it all?
Yes.
I think so.
Yes.
How come it never occurred to any of you boys to do that?
Well,
just part of housework.
Yeah.
Cleaning up the chamber.
Maybe she could keep track of the condition of your innards that way. Find out if there was anything wrong.
Yeah.
So, you came in after the milking the cows, which took what, half an hour, 45 minutes?
Yeah, it'd take at least 45 minutes to an hour.
And what kind of a container were you milking into? A pail?
Oh, yeah, we had a 3-gallon pail.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd carry it down to the house from the barn and run it to the separator.
Yeah.
The cream. And then the skim milk would carry it up to the hog barn.
Yeah. You didn't have a milking machine then.
No.
You had to use your hands.
Yes.
When you were 7 or 8 years old, were your fingers big and strong enough that you could milk well?
Yeah, a cow that didn't milk too hard, I could milk. Yeah.
Do you remember feeling the pain?
Well, you just kind of build up to it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you sit on a 3-legged stool?
Yes.
Did you put up your head against the cow's body?
Mine was a 3-legged stool.
Huh?
Mine was just a 1-legged stool. Oh. You had to balance yourself while you're milking.
Really?
Yeah.
String hanging down to the top to tie their tail to so she wasn't switching you with her tail.
Uh-huh. And
they were in the stanchions, you know. We'd feed them hay and grain in their stanchions.
Were they standing there when you were milking?
Yes.
Yeah, so that sort of constrained them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weren't supposed to move too much.
You had a one or two favorite cows, did you, because they were easier to milk?
Yeah, there was some variation there, all right. We just kind of picked out of the herd. See, we had the We didn't really have a dairy. We never used a dairy bull. We just take a cow out of the herd that had good tits that would tame. So that's how they worked that.
With these early experiences with cows, I suppose horses around too, that were there? Horses?
Lots of them, because they went fixed the, had lots of horses because you worked horses.
Yeah, it took
in the
30
field.
Head of horses to do the farming.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, we raised, had raised our saddle horses then too.
Mm-hmm.
We always had a stallion. He sent, in 1934, he sent to Belgium for a stallion.
Yeah, you told that story.
Okay.
Yeah. It's often been said that kids who grow up on farms learn the facts of life pretty quickly and without very much hemming and hawing. I mean, everything's pretty...
Sort of natural.
Pretty clear is how things work. Was that your experience?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not a cause for embarrassment at all, is it?
Not that I remember.
Well, just how things work.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you talked about breakfast, this jerky that's chipped into gravy. That sounds good to me. I used to have something my mother made called dried beef, mm-hmm. that she put into a white flour gravy.
The same thing.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well,
I really like that.
Yeah, well, that's the same thing,
yeah.
Jerky.
Of course, they always had their cured bacons and hams, mm-hmm. besides, mm-hmm. and you know, and potatoes.
Yeah.
And
so there was never a question of getting up from the table hungry.
Oh, no.
Eat all you could eat?
In the late fall, I'd butcher maybe 4 or 5 hogs and work them up, render the lard. Had a big one of those big cast iron kettles in the basement, render the lard, and cure the hams and bacons and hang them in the smokehouse,
mm-hmm.
and then bury them in the oat bin in the barn to keep the mice out of them.
Keep the mice out of them?
Yeah, bury them in the oat. In the oat bin.
How deep?
That kept them dry. Yeah.
How deep?
Well, the mice wouldn't dig down very deep. You know,
6 or 8 inches?
6 or 8 inches deep. Yeah.
How long would they keep there?
Yeah, they kept well.
How long?
Well, they'd keep all winter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I suppose maybe they'd get a little bit, like you call it freezer burn now, but they get a little, probably.
Dry.
A little.
And then they probably take the dry part and cook that.
A little reasty.
So you just leave them all there and then take them out one at a time as you needed them?
Right.
And how many might there be that would last all winter?
Well, if we butchered a half a dozen hogs, why, that would last clear through. Maybe probably into through the summer for harvest time, too, even.
Well, you got several hams from each hog, didn't you?
Yeah, you'd have 2 hams and 2 bacons from each hog.
Sure. Okay.
And then they cleaned the pig's feet, pickled the pig's feet and the ears.
Made head cheese.
Yeah.
Didn't waste any part of them. Mm-hmm. Maybe the ears. I don't think we used the ears. We always used the feet.
So from the time you were about 6, I suppose once you had done the milking and had breakfast, it was time to go to school.
Yeah, I had to have the horses saddled up.
Yeah. So that took you to what, 3 or 3:30 in the afternoon? Is that when you were done from school and back home?
Oh, it seemed like school was out 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock, always.
Yeah, I think 4 o'clock.
Then it took what, half an hour, 45 minutes to get back home?
Yeah.
What did you have to do when you got home?
Oh, I'd have to milk, have to do chores, milk cows.
Same ones you'd milk in the morning?
Yeah, yeah. Separate the cream now, feed the pigs.
Uh-huh. While you were doing the milking, was your brother or anybody else also milking at the same time?
Well, my uncle usually helped me milk.
Did you have conversations while you were milking?
Yeah, sometimes, whatever needed to be.
We had cats around that were waiting for the milk when we got through.
You give them a saucer of milk?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Always have cats.
Okay. So you might be done with milking at 5:15 or 5:30. Mm-hmm. Then what?
Come in for breakfast.
No, this is night now, late afternoon, evening.
Oh, in the evening.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, after the chores were all done, why come in and have them?
Well, what other chores besides the milking?
Well, there were the horse chores. My dad took care of that, feeding the horses.
We always had to carry in wood for the wood stoves.
Yeah, the wood box for the heating stove and the cook stove.
The daily supply.
Yes.
We'd have to get the lights ready for night. Yeah. Get the lights ready the kerosene lamps or whatever.
Always had a woodshed back in the kitchen. Stored the wood.
Did you have to split it when you were a little older?
When I was older, I split some wood. I don't remember real young splitting wood.
Uh-huh. Okay, then while you were doing the chores, Mom was cooking the dinner?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, had you taken sandwiches to school?
Oh, we always get her lunch.
Yeah. So she was making those after she finished the breakfast.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. So dinner would usually consist of what? Meat, potatoes, a vegetable, milk, pie?
Always fruit. We had canned fruit, dried fruit. Mm-hmm. There was always fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Canned fruit.
And again, eat all you can eat?
Yeah, we always had plenty to eat.
Did the whole family eat together?
Yes.
Always.
In the kitchen?
No, it's a kind of a combination a dining room. It was the dining room off from the kitchen.
Oh, that's a little unusual, I would think, in the early days. a round table?
I don't remember. It seemed like it was kind of oblong.
Mm-hmm. But everybody could see everybody else?
Yes.
Did you have assigned seating?
Have what?
Assigned seating.
You sit at the same place every time?
Oh, yeah, pretty much.
Dad at the head?
Yeah.
Mom at the other end?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the kids on the sides?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had probably made their table. They had probably built their table to fit the house.
Were your grandparents living with you at that time or near?
They were in the younger years. Grandparents, we all lived together in the house down there.
Oh, yeah, you all lived in the same house.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Dinner would, what, take half an hour or so?
Dinner? Yeah, it'd take half, three quarters of an hour.
What did you do next?
Well, as a harvest or hay crews, we always cooked for them. And they had a
that
bunk.
That would have been in August?
We had a bunkhouse.
Yeah.
Well, in May and June when the haying. July. Always had hired men, through the winter, there'd be one or two hired men to help feed. And do
so they came in and ate with the family?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Some of those were rough characters, weren't they?
Yeah, you had all kinds.
I think you said that your mother didn't want you to associate too much with hired men because they cussed and told dirty stories.
Yeah, the bunkhouse. They didn't want us kids out in the bunkhouse.
So they were a little concerned about your being contaminated, maybe.
Yeah.
Your morals being corrupted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's why it surprises me a little bit that the hired men would be allowed in to eat dinner with the family.
Well, there never was, that I remember, any problems.
Were they reasonably polite?
Yes, mostly. I remember. Granddad, back then, these preachers had to work to make a living.
Yeah.
The church couldn't support them. Mm-hmm. And Granddad, I don't know how he got acquainted with them, but I remember one year there was three different preachers on the crew coming to work on the harvest crew.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, he was a cowboy preacher, and sometimes he'd get started, and everybody else would be through and go up and leave, and he was still talking.
Whether anybody was there to listen.
Yeah. He was an interesting guy.
Well, after dinner, what did you say you did next, usually?
depend on what was...
if it was winter, it was dark and it was dark.
Okay, well, during the school year, let's say.
If it was winter time, why, we headed out to school, and she rode 3 miles to country school.
Now, this was...
We headed out, and then, of course, the folks would go out and feed the cattle. There was always snow through the winter, and they'd feed with bobsled, and...
I was trying to make you stick to one day, typically, during the school year, after dinner. What, did you have homework to do?
Not much. My dad always read. He'd usually have a book, you know.
And did he insist that you listen?
Did what?
Did he insist that you listen?
Yes.
So you had to sit there quiet, whether you liked it or not?
Well, it didn't last all that long. Yeah. You know, even.
Was he reading Bible stories, for instance?
I don't remember as much Bible as other history books. I don't remember where they got them.
My dad had a lot of history books. He loved to read history, and that's the only kind of books he had.
Uh-huh. And then, of course, when they finally got a radio, battery-powered radio, we'd always listen to Amos and Andy. Mm-hmm. That was quite an attraction.
Yeah. I was probably listening on the East Coast at the same time you were listening here. I listened to Amos and Andy, too. I think most Americans did if they had access to a radio. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Do you remember hearing news broadcasts?
No, I don't recollect.
Were you aware of what was going on in the world in any way?
Not a lot. Not a lot. There wasn't much... I don't remember what publication paper, if there was a local paper.
We always had the Elgin Recorder. I don't know whether you got whatever the
grant. The Observer was being printed at that time.
Yeah, I suppose we got the Observer.
And some people got the Oregon Journal. It came in by train every day.
Yeah, we did. We got the Oregon Journal.
In the wintertime, we'd get mail maybe once a week.
Well, do you remember seeing books or magazines lying around the house that you could pick up if you wanted to?
Yeah.
Sears Roebuck catalog, mostly.
Yeah.
Montgomery Ward
catalog. That's the wish book.
Yeah.
What time do you have to go to bed?
Well, we had usually a regular time, pretty much a regular time by 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And did you say you were in an upstairs bedroom that was very cold in the winter?
No. Well, this new house in 35 was built while you had a slip upstairs.
Uh-huh.
But the old house, the bedrooms were all on the... It was just a single floor.
Did you take off all your clothes and put on some kind of pajamas, or...?
We usually had pajamas, yes.
And did you take off your clothes downstairs or upstairs? Upstairs would be mighty cold. You'd have to do it fast, wouldn't you?
Well, this house down here had heat that went upstairs, so the bedrooms weren't that cold.
Some people talk about heated bricks that they had in their beds.
Yeah.
Did you use that device?
The only ones I remember is when we'd go with the team and buggy. It had a big rope.
Yeah.
You know, we'd put a brick or something at our feet.
Well, did you wear socks to bed?
Probably.
It was mighty cold when you got into the bed, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a hot water bottle.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
way back then.
You just take that, or keep the hot water bottle down next to the stove and fill it up and bring it up?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good system. Yeah.
Of course, we never did have an upstairs. We just had the one level.
Mm-hmm.
So, our house was always snug and warm and well-built. We didn't have lots of air coming in. We didn't have lots of wind out there. I don't think it seemed like the snow got so high in the winter that we'd walk over the fences and everything.
Yeah.
It didn't blow away like it does now.
When you finished elementary school, that was 8th grade here, at Lower Cove, right? And then you went to, boarded in La Grande for 3 years. At that time you were 14, 15, probably you were 14 when you graduated from 8th grade.
Yes.
When you weren't boarding in Le Grand, you were home here during the summer and on weekends, did you have assigned duties the way you'd had before when you were younger?
Probably, on weekends and through the summer.
It would be more than milking the cows, wouldn't it?
Yes.
What else did you have to do? Pitch hay and...
Oh, through the summer.
Do man's work?
Through the summer, yeah. I'd drive team wagon and then we'd fork the hay into the barn or with the Jackson fork, you know, and drive derrick. We had a big hay shed down here that hold 200 tons of long hay. And then the barn up here held 80 tons.
Did it seem to you at that time that moving from being a boy into being a man didn't take very long?
Well, you just kind of evolved into it.
But did it seem to you to happen quickly?
From one... I first experienced driving in teams. I drove a team and hauled water to the steam engine. I had a tank, 400 gallons, and I'd drive to the river, put the hose, suction hose in the river, and pump on 400 gallons of water all to the steam engine. And then a couple of years later, I was running a bundle wagon or a header box wagon.
Yeah.
I was big enough to pitch into the thrashing machine.
Do you think it would be accurate to say that because there was so much work to do on the farm, and especially if you were male, you had to do outside work all the time? It never let up. Therefore, you didn't have time to be an adolescent?
Well, we didn't.
Adolescents are fairly irresponsible, typically.
We didn't have time to recreate. Much.
Yeah.
In fact, when I went to high school, I never was on the ball teams because I had to get on the school bus and come home. And the town kids, they could practice after school, so they made the team.
Well, what I'm getting at, I guess a little more explicitly, is that many adolescents are known for being pretty rowdy and irresponsible, say between the ages of 13 or 14 and 17 or 18. I have the impression that if you were a boy growing up on the farm in those times, there was no time for that.
No. In fact, my dad never let me have a bicycle. He said it was ruination of a kid to be larping around on the bicycle when you had a good saddle horse.
You had to agree, of course. Yeah. It wasn't a good place to ride a bicycle around here anyway,
no.
Was it?
Not very.
Never even had a sidewalk.
Yes. No. Do you remember when you were moving into the middle, well, the late childhood, early manhood years, being, maybe more conscious about what you wore or how you looked?
We didn't go to town or socialize very much in those days. There was at the schoolhouse, the American Sunday School Union organized a Sunday school. And my folks, we'd go to Sunday school fairly regular on Sunday. If through the winter time, it was with team and hack or buggy. And if the roads were good in the summer, why, it was the Model T Ford. And then in 1928, they bought a Chevrolet.
Yeah. But I asked you if you became more conscious of how you looked or what you wore.
Well, you certainly... You eventually kind of work into that, you know, when you get into high school.
Did that happen to you?
I suppose it did. Yeah,
I have the impression from what you said that maybe you didn't care much about that aspect of your life.
Well, it seemed like that back then everybody was dressed about the same, you know. You're just pretty much on one level.
Mm-hmm.
course.
You did say, though, that when you got to LeGrand High School, there were the farm kids and the city kids, and they were different.
Yeah, they were more segregated, I guess you'd say.
Did you think the city kids kind of looked down on you, farm kids?
Oh, I don't remember.
I guess you would have known
that.
I've heard that said a number of times, that the farm boys coming into LeGrand High School were regarded as dumb, didn't know anything, hardly a worth of respect.
Well, I suppose there was a certain amount of that, all right.
It wasn't true, but that's the way that's what they thought.
Yeah.
Well, most of the town kids had access to a car, and they would court and date and all that, which these kids had.
Go to the movies every Saturday?
Right.
Yeah.
You don't recall any feelings of maybe envy about the city life?
Just didn't have that much contact with city people.
Well, if you were 40 in LeGrand 5 days a week, you had enough contact to notice that what they were doing was different from what you'd been doing.
We did with the school kids, but I didn't participate in the sports. No, I had to come home and do my homework. Pretty much about our routine.
Okay.
I didn't want this county job. I didn't.
The county commission.
I didn't aspire to it. But
you didn't have
Roland Schott was on the and Meisner and Bernal Hogg, and it seemed like that. I don't know whether Bernal just kind of burned out or what, but anyway, Schott come to me and he wanted me to run against Bernal. He said Bernal's just kind of a yes man. He's interested in other things more than that. He has a hysterectomy every year. He was in the history, you know, pretty heavy. But no, it wasn't my bag.
What was your concept of what the county or county commission did before you were on it?
Well, I guess one of the reasons that Roland was anxious to get somebody on, they were having quite an upheaval with the roadmaster. The road people, employed road people, they were having having conflicts with the roadmaster. They'd hired a guy, he come from California, he was an equipment salesman. And Roland thought he was really, really okay.
What decade was this?
That was in the 1970s.
Okay.
Early 3 years. I just served one term.
A three-year term?
4 years, yeah.
Four.
So, I knew several of the road people that worked for the county. You know, they'd be out here on the road, and I'd visit with them. They come along graded and whatever, and they run the rock crusher up there, and the county did. And I know once those boys, some of them are coal boys, and they'd come a running to me and bitching about how the county of the road management was. Didn't like it.
What were the problems?
They didn't like the roadmaster.
Just his personality or some of the things he did?
Well, the policy and all, you know, it just wasn't organized. He just couldn't get things.
Was this building new roads or maintaining old ones?
Well, mostly maintaining maintenance. Uh-huh. So anyway, Shadi wanted me to run. And so I guess if I accomplished anything, we did have a shake-up, and we got an outfit, service outfit. He came out of Chicago and did an evaluation of the county, the whole system. And he said, you need to get a new roadmaster. So we put applications out, and we had, there was three, finally shook down to three, and Alvin Campbell was one. And Alvin had been, he'd been the head of one of the departments in the road department. He knew the county, and he got along with the people. So anyway, we fired that roadmaster and put Alvin Campbell in. And things smoothed out pretty good. But before we did, the employees had started to organize a union. And that was a mistake. If they'd got rid of that roadmaster and had somebody that could work with them, they would never have got into that union thing. That was...
What was bad about the union idea?
Well, it was just... It just caused more contention, you know. They wanted...
Us against them?
They thought they could pressure the county for more benefits and whatever, you know, and working conditions. And and Alvin, the roadmaster, things smoothed out pretty good. And Alvin knew the county and all, and I was supposed to work with him. And so I didn't need to look over his shoulder much, because he knew what to do. He got along with the fellas.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's entirely a different ball. Mm-hmm. You know what they paid us then? $3,000 a year. And a little mileage. Well, now there's three of them and a couple secretaries. Their budget is up towards $200,000
a
year.
Yeah. I suppose you saw the job as public service mostly, didn't you?
Well, that was what was expected.
Yeah, yeah. What other responsibilities did you as a commissioner have?
Just mainly go to meetings maybe once a week, and the paperwork that come through, we just approved.
Who decided what you were going to discuss?
Well, that came to the judge. All that paperwork, and his secretary would come to the judge, and then we'd have a meeting, and he'd run it by, and we'd approve or disapprove of it.
The judge was the chairman then?
Yes.
Do you think that's the way it had been earlier? That seems unusual to me.
Yeah, the judge would be the chairman. Yeah.
Was he the judge for the whole county?
What
was?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was he hearing or conducting trials and evidence?
No, this was just pertaining to the road.
County commission.
No, I mean, did he have, in addition to his job with the county commission, also the job...